Let's see. Here's the first bite. I'm going to slurp. Are you a slurp or a sipper?
I sip. I try not to slurp.
Here we go.
This is the Greg Cody Show with Greg Cody.
Pardon it.
Here's your host, Greg Cody.
But hello. You're frozen. Like Elsa. You're frozen.
Yo.
Hey. Hey, hey, we're the monkeys. I want to sing a 30-second snippet of a song that's been all over my brain.
Okay.
I'm gonna be the next big nothing. You won't see my name on MTV. I'm gonna be the next big nothing. No one knows my name in Tennessee. All right. Sonny Sweeney, next big nothing. I've been serial listening to that song in my garage. Hey, we got to figure out how to launch this because I got a lot we can talk about.
We just did. That was the start of the podcast.
All right. Well, welcome. Welcome back to the Greg Cody Show with Greg Cody and Chris Cody. This is episode 39. And if anybody's still counting at home along with me.
Nobody
and,
is.
I know. And but next week's a big one because it's 40. It ends in zero. Maybe a pate. A par day.
Isn't that a sad birthday for us? Like, isn't 40 like one of the sadder birthdays?
It can be. I remember when I turned 40, and it's a little bit of
I think all the birthdays ending in zero are sad once you hit 40. Like, each one just gets sadder. Right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no doubt. Are you kidding me? You're seeing, you're basically inching closer to the grave in a way that becomes more and more palpable and undeniable.
But anyway.
Hey, welcome all to the podcast. Happy to have you all back here. We got a big show. Thank you for abiding my terrible voice and my attempt at singing. But
what family member do we have on this week?
We don't have a family member, believe it or not. We've done Uncle Dick. We've done Michael is in occasionally. Last week we had Christy, my beautiful daughter-in-law, and now we're out of family members.
I think Riley's next, the dog.
It could be. If we can get Riley to have an adequate conversation, we're going to bring her in. But I will tell you that our guest today almost feels like family because I've been knowing this guy more than 40 years. And we had him on our second ever podcast way back in March. It's Ray Hudson, the magisterial soccer commentator and former player. And I want to mention one thing before we get to the Tualist Dolphins beating the worst team on the planet today, Sunday. I want to talk about one of my life experiences that I had recently. And that's one of the cool things about going through this journey we call life is that no matter how old you get, there's always new things to experience. And here I went to my first bat mitzvah. I attended my first bat mitzvah. Now, over the years, I've been to a couple of the post parties, but this was the first time I ever sat in on the bat mitzvah ceremony, which is, of course, in the Jewish religion where the 13-year-old girl is, I guess, coming of age. I'm not sure how it's referred to, but it's a ceremonial thing.
A pandemic bat mitzvah.
It was. Instead of being in a synagogue where it normally would have been, it was in the grandparents of this girl's backyard. And we were honored to be invited. Everyone wore masks.
It was probably a huge house.
It was a huge house. I'm going to say it was pretty damn impressive.
But, was there? I think like bat mitzvahs and bar mitzvahs are known for their hijinks. Like in terms of like crazy money spent on ridiculous things at the party. Like I know Stu Gatz, I think his daughters a couple years ago had like,
right, you know,
people eating flames and stuff. Like, was there anything like, you know, that you said to yourself, wow, that had to be expensive?
Yes. Throughout the ceremony, I was thinking that to myself.
Because Riley, there's our next
Riley
guest.
Barks in the background.
That's our next guest, Riley Cody, everyone.
I know. She's chomping at the bit to get on right now. She's barking right outside my door.
What ridiculous expenses were at this bat mitzvah?
Well, first of all, it's at a house with a backyard that is such that weddings have been held in that backyard. Like people have, I don't know if anybody rented it out. I mean, it's probably people they know, but weddings are held in this backyard. It's so gorgeous. And, you know, they rented a By the way, it was in Parkland. It was in Stu Gatz's neck of the woods. I kept expecting him to be the bat mitzvah crasher who was just there for the hors d'oeuvres or something. But no, they had a great spread. They had Chick-fil-A was in there. You know, they had like a Chick-fil-A booth and a donut wall. I mean, a DJ, of course. But I was very impressed. And anybody who's been to a bat mitzvah is going to go, yeah, no duh, buddy. But this was my first one. So it was educational for me. And I loved how it went in and out of Hebrew and English. I loved how it went in and out of spoken and song. It was a festive occasion. It's very much a celebration. And the other thing that really impressed me was, and I never knew this before attending, how hard these kids work and how long these kids work, these 13-year-old boys and girls. This girl was studying for her bat mitzvah since January, since before the pandemic. And during the pandemic, it all had to go virtual. So nearly a year of these kids' lives is spent celebrating to learn the language, to learn the, you know, what they're doing in this great ceremony. And it was just neat.
That sounds awful, though, like having to study a lot like that, like as a kid.
it sounds pretty awful to me.
But did you wear the hat?
Yeah, they like to call it a yarmulke, or I hope I'm pronouncing that right. But yes, I did. And, you know, Greg Cody has a little bald spot growing, so he didn't mind having headwear that just directly covered his little bald spot. It was actually perfect.
Did you dance?
No, there was no dancing. There really? Was no dance, but there was singing. You know,
haven't told me like they lift him on a chair. Is that a thing?
Like, yes. Yes.
Did you
lift it on a chair?
Were you lifting one of the legs?
I was not. Thank God I wasn't. Wow. Imagine the pressure not to be the one who drops the poor girl.
So what ridiculous expenses? Like what was the wow factor of this? Like, is this just a story of Greg Cody learning what a bar mitzvah is?
There were not ridiculous expenses. You know, they had a DJ, they had music, it was catered, obviously. They had,
so there was no like
an open bar,
there was no live side, there was no full grown elephant.
No.
Okay. Maybe pandemic, because like it was tamed down because of the pandemic.
It could be. I can rule out the full grown elephant.
Like, I want jugglers, like Stu Gatz, like I said, so maybe someone eating a flame, like some sort of ice luge.
No, there was none of that stuff. See, now you're making it seem like it wasn't a special occasion. Well, no, there was no three-ring circus. I mean,
that's what I'm saying.
Acrobats.
You're the one sitting here saying you don't know much about bat mitzvahs. I'm telling you, a lot of bat mitzvahs are just insanely over the top with like that type of stuff.
Okay, the bat mitzvah I attended,
like Adam Sandler all of a sudden is performing at your bat mitzvah because your rich grandpa paid him to come perform.
Right. No, Adam Sandler was not there. An elephant was not there. Acrobats were not there. Flame eaters were not there.
But other than that, it was an amazing bat mitzvah.
It was. It was. I just really loved it and wanted to talk about it just because anybody who hasn't been to a bat mitzvah or a bar mitzvah needs to cultivate Jewish friends who have someone of that age, because it really is a worthwhile experience to get to. Now, you, I want to talk briefly. You actually paid hard-earned money to watch the Tyson Roy Jones Jr. fight, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, really, it was the Jake Paul Nate Robinson fight.
Oh my God!
It was a spectacle. Like, it wasn't like obviously a normal. You didn't feel like you were getting obviously the most elite boxing matches.
Really?
But I'm telling you, I mean, Nate, did you see like on Twitter like what happened with Nate Robinson and Jake Paul?
Apparently, well, first of all, I'd never heard of Jake Paul. Anybody who is described as quote unquote a YouTube star, I immediately, X off my list of people I need to know about.
That's I think that's a little dismissive. Like, it's a
no, it isn't. It's very dismissive. Yeah, and I intend it to be.
Okay. I mean, you can hate on him all you want. It's a new modern way to make money for kids in this generation. YouTube is a thing, and he is popular enough that a lot of people watch his, Dad, as somebody who cares so much about clicks, you would respect somebody who's just posting videos on YouTube. You could start a YouTube channel, and all of a sudden he's getting millions and millions of views. I feel like someone like you would respect that.
Okay. I don't care about any of that. Tell me about the fight for the old ages, Tyson age 54 against Roy Jones Jr., age 51. It was a draw, and there's nothing duller or worse than a draw in any sport, a tie in any sport. So tell me about this bout.
It was a little sad. I mean, Tyson still had some speed. Like, obviously, he's not the same, but he won that fight. And most people agreed that. And since it wasn't an actual, right, like, you couldn't bet on it. It wasn't like officially scored, but they had people there scoring it. So they named a winner after, even though it was not an official winner. So it was just a weird, sketchy situation with that. And then they ended up calling it a draw, and everyone kind of thought Tyson had won. And even Roy Jones after the fight's like, he was basically saying like, he didn't think he won. And I think honestly, they want to do it again. Like that was, they were kind of hinting at.
Yeah. The reaction on social media definitely was that Tyson won. So it was exciting. No ears were bitten off. It was it a quality fight, or was it just two old guys in good shape for their age?
I was not that impressed with Roy Jones Jr. He was jabbing a little bit, catching him a little bit, but Tyson was a little impressive. No, it was not an impressive thing. It looked like two guys. Roy Jones Jr. was exhausted. He should have lost just based on, at least to Mike Tyson's credit, they went the full, it was only, by the way, 8 rounds, but 2 minutes each round. So it was an abbreviated fight. But at the end of the fight, Roy Jones Jr. was like huffing and puffing throughout all the post-fight stuff. And Mike Tyson was relatively like, you know, he looked like he was in much better shape, at least from that aspect.
I want to, before we get on to...
we need to get to Tua, because I have a feeling we're going to disagree about this.
But first, I just want to mention real quickly that Greg Cody hosted his annual Thanksgiving dinner for a select small crowd of family. And the highlight of the Thanksgiving dinner was what happened afterward with my turkey soup. Was fantastic. Have you had it yet?
No.
Because I gave you some.
No.
Okay. I make it every year, and it's good every year. I can make some turkey soup. Carcass is the key. Obviously, you got to make that stock, that broth with the carcass and veggies and everything. But it was just the best ever. It was, I included rice instead of pasta. I included some herbs de Provence, which were actually purchased in France by me personally on a vacation. And the soup was probably the best I've ever made. So I'm just doing a little bragging. I wish all of you within the sound of my voice could taste that soup.
You're the kind of guy, though, that says every 3 years it's the best you've ever made, your turkey soup.
I keep raising my bar. I do. I keep raising my bar. And
it is always good, and I'm going to eat it. So, like, I guess maybe next week I'll have my verdict.
Yes, I would love, in all honesty.
Or should I go heat some up right now and then eat it?
You can do that if you want, but maybe next week you can have an appraisal. And I want it to be brutally honest. You can tell me it tastes like bleep, and you can tell me it's the best you've ever had.
You know what?
No in-betweens.
I think while the people are listening to Ray Hudson, I will try some soup, and then I will grade your soup at the end of the episode.
Oh, that's a beautiful idea. Thank you. That's why we pay you the big bucks to produce this thing that we call a podcast. Okay, we're going to get to Tua-less Dolphins winning over the hapless Jets. But first, just a really quick NBA Miami Heat mention, because what the NBA is doing is insane. Okay, the NBA finals ended about a minute and a half ago. Okay, actually, it was less than 2 months ago. It was 50 days ago between the end of the NBA finals and the start of NBA training camps. That's not enough time for bodies to recover. It's unfair to these NBA players. Instead of making it a 72-game season that started so soon on Christmas Day, they should make it a 50-game season and start it in February. What they're doing to these poor players.
These poor players. You mean the type of players that you are coming at this as a Heat, Miami Heat, like, writer. Like, it only stinks for the Heat. The Lakers just won a title, so they're going to be fine. You realize there's teams that haven't played since March.
Right.
Like, this is, you're only talking about the Heat and the Lakers, maybe the final four teams, you could argue. You know, this is a weird year. I get the league needing to start.
Right. It's a terrible competitive imbalance when you're asking teams that have been at rest since March to play against teams that were playing less than 2 months ago. It's sort of crazy. But anyway.
Well, what do you mean? Like, they're always you can't change the fact that because of the pandemic, those teams didn't play since March. Like, there's no way. Like, the league has to start again. Like, should the league start first for the people that what are you saying right now? What do you mean it's not right? What's the alternative?
What I'm saying is the league should not be starting less than 2 months after the last season ended. They should be waiting a couple of more months. Because
it's 2.5 months. It's not 2 weeks.
These bodies aren't ready.
Have you watched LeBron James on Instagram? He's like working out every day. Like, it's not like he's like, right. What do you mean? Like, he's
not the average player. All right. Let's tell me what you thought of the Tulsa Dolphins beating the worst team, perhaps in the history of teams. You barely saw the game because you were playing golf. But other than that, tell me what you thought.
That's not true. We had it on our phone. We had the Red Zone channel up, and then I watched the whole second half.
Okay.
But I'm very weary of how you're going to attack this, because I feel like you're going to say that, you know, the Dolphins should start Ryan Fitzpatrick. Like, that's my guess. Am I wrong? Like, what do you think?
You could not be more wrong. I said last week on this podcast that they should not have benched him when they did. No, absolutely not. The team is Tua's, and when his thumb has healed and he's ready to go, he should be the starting quarterback.
Okay,
I say that unequivocally.
Okay, good. My bad then. I'm sorry for like thinking you were going to go the other direction, but no. Yes, that's how I feel the same way too. This is like, because I'm getting texts from Dolphin fans that are like saying, oh, cute quarterback controversy. And it's like,
no,
we know what the ceiling is for Ryan Fitzpatrick. Like, that's what you're arguing for. Like, that's your big thing. Let's punt on our future potential franchise quarterback for Ryan Fitzpatrick. And I guess you're not arguing that. So I'm sorry for arguing with you like you're arguing. I'm very sensitive to that. Like this, like you said, we're on the same page here. This is Tua's team this year going forward, and we'll see what we have with him. Let's get on to the beautiful wordsmith, the man who speaks with brilliance. That's my Ray Hudson. That was my Ray Hudson impersonation.
It was okay. That's not good.
That's fine. Like, honestly, I don't even need to worry about what he says. I just want to hear him talk.
Oh, truly. Ray Hudson could open up a phone book and just start reciting names and addresses, and I would be mesmerized.
Alan Hamill.
That almost sounded like a former Fort Lauderdale striker. Anyway, let's move on. Here's Ray Hudson talking a little Inter Miami and mostly on the passing of the great Maradona.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey, Ray.
Hey, Greg, can you hear me?
I can, yes, very clearly.
I'm never sure how to set these things up with
everything. I'm not either. Truth be told, my son is my producer, but he's playing golf right now. So I had to frantically call him on the golf course and ask him to talk me through this. Hey, thanks for doing this. I really appreciate it.
No, you're very welcome. Anything for you, Greg.
I mainly want to talk to you about Maradona and his legacy. But first, I wonder if we can just talk a little bit about, put in perspective, the first season of Inter Miami. I think you were one of my first guests on the second podcast I did. And at that time, I was sort of, I wasn't bad-mouthing the roster, but I thought it didn't quite live up to the billing that Beckham had given it. But I must say, after that 0-5 start, I thought they turned into a pretty credible first-year team. What's your synopsis of year one for Inter Miami?
I agree completely, Greg. Even though at the start of the season, when they opened up a very, very tough schedule, I don't think anybody thought that they would play as well and as combined as what they did. It looked as if it was coming together really impressively. tight games that they lost, but always competitive. And it looked as if it was going to be really a bit of a surprising season for an expansion team. And then during the this catastrophic year that we've had, when the coronavirus started to break out and take a grip of the world, the effect seemed to be perpetuated into Miami's team, with bad luck following bad luck, losing key players as the season went on, losing the captain. The new signings would come in, world-class players undoubtedly, but the integration into a landscape like this was a mission impossible for this coach, Diego Alonso. And I think he made some mistakes along the season. His pragmatism a little bit came to the fore with a team that is looking as if they could really explode. But, you know, that's all debatable. That's just the way the game goes sometimes from game to game. But all in all, I think when we look back at the end of Miami's first season, they had the devil's luck in so many situations. And that cannot, it's not a thing to hang an analysis on, that they were unlucky. They had the devil's luck this year. What I will say, Greg, is that I think Inter Miami, this was more like a soft opening for them, a situation where the crowd wasn't in full attendance and may have been a little bit more critical and demanding of them. But who knows, that might have turned them into a better team. It's all for gossip. At the end of the day, they came through with some memorable performances. I felt as if this was my local team. I felt a real attachment to this side. When they lost, I felt anguish. I felt a pain. I really did. And when they won, I just felt better. Now, I didn't expect that. And that attachment formed throughout the season, and it ended with disappointment. But that's the way it goes with football.
I really look forward to a return to normalcy for this team and a packed stadium, because the atmosphere in MLS and in all of soccer and football is so dependent on the crowd to me. And I really think that that the crowd would have lifted this rookie team had it been there in full. So that's going to be something to look forward to.
I've got to say, you know, the few times that there were like cameo performances by the crowd, the fanaticos that filled the crowd sparsely, but it was an indication that was one of the best games. I can't remember who they were playing against, but when that game where they let the crowd in, they played some of their sharpest, quickest, synchronized football, and they responded to the crowd. So, they, as I said, I'd go to my grave saying they had the devil's luck this season, and hopefully next year, next season, it'll be a lot better.
Ray, I want to turn, I promised I wouldn't keep you too long, so I want to turn to the passing of Maradona. It's a seismic death in the sports world, the international world, the football world. Pelé scored more goals. Messi probably won more trophies. What is it about Maradona that puts him in that echelon?
Well, he is definitely on a planet, in my eyes, of a population of three on the greatest footballers that ever played the game. There's Pelé, there's Maradona, and there's Messi. In my opinion, it's all debatable. There were other great number 10s, you know, Ronaldinho was another one, George Hadji was another one, Zico, Totti, these were magisterial footballers. But those three, the three from South America, the Latin influence, for me, they were the most beguiling. Maradona was different to Messi and Pelé in so many ways. He was a pibe. That means he came from the gutter. He was a player who never forgot that and would fight all of the acclaim that he got for being a people's man. That's why he was so revered in Argentina. Whereas Messi left at a very young age, but still had that brilliance of Maradona. Maradona did it in a way, and at a time, Greg, where the brutality in the game was was machete like. I mean, the players carried machetes in their jock straps to tackle him. He was kicked off the park. It was the same with Pelé. Messi gets a lot more protection now. Thank God. They kicked all of that Goicoechea in his leg, the butcher of Bilbao that hurt Maradona so badly, broke his ankle. And he had to fight against all of these incredible mountains. For Napoli in particular, he was the player who really inspired a team, especially at a time when Italy in Serie A had inarguably the best league in the world, the biggest stars in the world. The pressure was more intense, and he went to Napoli and won two Serie A titles with them. That may not seem much up against the silverware that Messi brought, but you can't compare Pelé with Messi and Pelé with Maradona and Messi with Pelé. It's futile. For me, Greg, I'll say this. Maradona had his faults, had his flaws, but it was as a human. It wasn't as a player. In a player, he personified everything that you want as in a footballer. He had the heart. He had the drive. He had the desire. He had the damn the torpedoes. His country was facing a war with England, and he dragged them through a game that gave us the hand of God and the feet of God as well. An astonishing player at a time where we only glimpsed at these aliens. We didn't get to see them every 5 minutes on BeIN Sports and on ESPN. You only saw them really in the big tournaments in the World Cup and in very few highlight reels of this player coming out of Argentina that is the size of a little bull but covered with eyes. Covered with eyes and the delicacy and touch of a ballet dancer. He was such a leader for his country and for his clubs as well. Revered. And I don't like talking about his flaws because it was all as a human. And maybe human side of nature let him down as well. Maybe that's they could have helped him more. They could have protected him more. But at that time, in that era, that wasn't the way. And he was seduced by maybe weaknesses in his own psyche, and yet he rose above it. And that's what made him so beloved in Argentina especially, and why there will only ever be one greatest of all time in Argentina's eyes, and it will be Diego Armando Maradona.
Yeah, Ray, you allude to the human frailties that are a fascinating part of the overall portrait of this man, because he spent a couple of decades in the throes of a cocaine addiction. He had health problems. He even had financial issues. But again, he was, as you say, off the field, he had his demons, but on the field, it was pure magic. I mean, one of a kind. And you alluded to the 86 World Cup. I think it was a quarterfinal against England, right? And yeah. Argentina won 2-1 on arguably two of the most famous goals in the sports history, the hand of God goal and then the winning goal, which has been called the goal of the century. I'm curious, you were still playing then. I think if memory serves, you were with the Minnesota Strikers indoor team around that time. How did you watch that game? What do you remember about watching that game live?
Well, the handball, of course, was the defining moment where England all appealed in the instant, and how the referee didn't recognize it is one for the history books. It has to be remembered in South America, those sorts of things aren't called cheating. They're called they're given a different moniker. In England, of course, who we remember were in the war against Argentina for the Battle of the Falklands, the Malvinas Islands. Maradona would have done anything. He was leading his country because they were losing on the war fields. And this was his moment. And he was not going to be denied. The goal was stunning with the handball. It seemed in live time as if you could see it when he beat Shilton. I still question Shilton for not coming out and getting the ball with a higher punch, but that's, again, debatable. The next goal took away all of the debate about whether he was a genius or not. The manner in which he scored the goal, again, is revered because it's skullduggery. It's a gamesmanship in Argentina and South America, by and large. But in England, it's the Corinthians way of playing. You can't do that. It's not cricket.
Right.
It's cheating and all of the rest. Well, he got away with it. But then in the second one, he defied everything that we see in a football. The balance was staggering. There's a great statue in I think it's in Buenos Aires. I'm not sure, maybe outside in the provinces, outside the big city. But there's the erected a statue to that great goal where Maradona beat five players and the goalkeeper. And what they have done, Diego is in the statue. They are the four or five English defenders. They are the statues. And it's in a park where the kids can get their ball and the players, the English statues, were made to look like statues, are spread out. So a young player can get the ball and dribble through them just like Maradona did.
Oh, that's great.
He left England in acid. And one of the greatest goals of all time, arguably the greatest ever in the World Cup. Magical moment. And it just, watching it, you just threw your hands up and your mouth, you had to pick your jaw off the floor because we'd witnessed God in football boots.
Ray, you and Maradona, roughly the same generation. Did you ever meet him?
Never, no. I met a player who I regarded to be his equal in Juan Román Riquelme and Messi, of course, but I never met Diego, never had the opportunity. There was one where he was attending, he was in Barcelona when I was there for a game, but our paths never crossed, and he was, again, I never got the opportunity to meet him.
What was the pinch me moment for you in your long career in the sport? Someone you got to meet where you were in awe or sort of couldn't believe that you're in this person's company?
It was Riquelme for me. The other Boca Juniors number 10, who for me was the equal of any number 10 that ever played the game. And I'm in a hotel in Buenos Aires where Boca Juniors were staying the night before a game. And everybody, the people I knew how much I was in love with this player. I was in love with him. I didn't revere him. I didn't like him. I loved him. And he was standing there. He had a dressing gown on and he had flip-flops. Again, another PB, another kid from the streets, from the barrios, pure barrios. And he didn't smile. I walked up to him, I spoke a little English. He looked at me, he gave me a little smirk because he knew how much I was gushing towards him. Right. He shook my hand and that was it. And I don't think I washed my hand for a month after that.
That's great. Ray, I'm gonna let you go. It's always a genuine pleasure to catch up to you and nobody knows the sport better or describes it more wonderfully than you do. How do I plug everything you do? You're in BeIN Sports America, Sirius XM FC channel. What else you got going on?
Situation, but that's in hibernation now. But yeah, Sirius XM FC in the mornings on channel 157, and of course on BeIN Sports for all of their great coverage.
And thank you so much for being an occasional drop by on my podcast. It's an honor and a pleasure. Thanks, Ray.
And back at you, Greg. You're the best, and I love you, and you take care, you and your family.
Good. You too. Really appreciate it. All right, Ray Hudson, thank you as always. That was great. I always enjoy that man's mellifluous expertise in all things soccer. And now, Chris Cody, I see you have some of my locally famous turkey and rice soup, and I would like you to appraise it.
It does look really good. I'm not going to lie. It looks very similar to every year. But the problem is, I did the old thing where I zapped it too long. It's really hot right now.
Oh, yeah. Scalding. Yeah.
And I don't know.
Let it cool off for 5 minutes.
You want to start Mount Gregmore, and we'll just do it at some point when it cools
down? Yeah, let's do Gregmore. That'll be a good amount of time for the soup to cool down to an edible temperature.
Okay. Go ahead.
All right. All right, everybody. We are well into the fourth quarter of the Love It or Hate It Mount Gregmore name game, the V's. It's a minor consonant V, but we lavish upon it the respect it deserves. Each week, we give you the top five most popular first names of a given letter based on U.S. government records over the past 100 years. But instead of five V names in the overall top 100, there were only three.
You mentioned this is the fourth quarter of the Mount Gregmore, and I really just hope this is not one of those fourth quarters with a bunch of timeouts in it, and then we can get this fourth quarter, you know, in the books. Maybe a lot of running the ball this fourth quarter.
You know what? There's also the prospect of overtime. We may start making up letters and extend the alphabet. You never know.
Nice.
Okay, so there are only three V names, and here we go. Number three, Vincent. Number two, Victoria. And the number one V, Virginia.
Really?
Boy.
Man.
This could be a challenge.
I feel like there were such better options for those other two names.
I know. I got to admit, this could be a challenge. Hey, no Ginnies here.
You should have just picked one of the other names.
No Ginnies here.
Vinny, that would have been so good for Vinny.
I know, but it wasn't Vinny. It was Vincent. We got to be legit, as always. Okay, let's go. First, our honorable mention. She is one of the most forgettable Sesame Street characters ever introduced. One not destined for the Muppet Hall of Fame. Introduced in 2008 as an Indiana Jones type adventurer, it's Virginia. That's right.
It was a funny line, you saying one of the most forgettable Sesame Street characters.
It really was. I had to look it up. I'd never heard of her. Number five, in 1897, an 8-year-old Manhattan girl asked her father if Santa Claus really existed. The dad suggested his daughter write and ask the New York Sun newspaper. A week later, the Sun wrote what would become the most reprinted newspaper editorial in the history of the English language. The little girl was named Virginia O'Hanlon. The famous editorial was headlined, "Yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus." How about that? Number four, she was famous by marriage and by notoriety. She was only 13. When she married a man of 27, and they were first cousins. I guess back then it wasn't that scandalous. He was the famous poet Edgar Allan Poe. His cousin Brian was Virginia Elizabeth Clem Poe. Number three, even a non-committal.
I mean,
number three, I'd never heard of this person, quite frankly. But in researching the V's, her name kept coming up. She's an American actress who starred in a string of successful teen movies in the 80s and was nominated for an Oscar for Best Supporting Actress in the wonderful 2004 comedy drama that I love called Sideways, Virginia Madsen. Do you know Sideways?
I don't.
Oh, it's great. It's set in wine country in Northern California. It stars, who's it star? Who's that? Paul Giamatti, who's one of my favorite actors. Anyway, check it out if you haven't, Sideways. Number two, from Great Britain. She was one of the most successful women's tennis players from the late 60s through the 70s, winning three majors, including the U.S. Open and Wimbledon, and rising as high as number two in the world rankings, Virginia Wade.
Only four more letters, folks.
And number one, she was a British writer, considered one of the most important modernist early 20th century writers, who pioneered stream of consciousness as a narrative device and is seen by some as someone who inspired the feminist movement. Her notable works included Mrs. Dalloway, To the Lighthouse, and A Room of One's Own. Edward Albee wrote a play that included her name in the title. Alas, she lived with mental illness and in 1942, at age 59, ended her own life in an intentional drowning. She was Virginia Woolf, Queen of the V's. Next week.
I'm not laughing at that she died that way. That's terrible. I'm saying,
right.
I'm laughing at how absurdly obscure that list of names was. You just
right. Yeah, and Albee's play, of course, was called Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? Next week, we move on to the alphabet's last major letter, I think, W. After that, we scramble to find X's, Y's, and Z's to bring this around-the-word cruise back to port. Mm-hmm. Can you guess the reigning W? See if you're right next episode. How about that? I'm trying to put a lot of drama in this by lowering my voice and kind of whispering.
All I know is that we were recording this, and it's almost halftime of this Chiefs-Bucks game. And right now the Chiefs are covering. And just so you know, Daddy needs the Chiefs to cover because it's been a rough week.
Okay. Been a rough week against the evil point spread, has it?
Yeah.
I hear that. I mean, I'm on a run with my picks. I don't know how I'm doing yet.
Did you pick Kansas City?
This weekend. I did, yeah.
Good.
What was the line?
-3.5.
Okay, I picked Kansas City to cover.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not a big number for Patrick Mahomes. Like
whenever the Chiefs play good teams, you have to take the Chiefs because you get the Chiefs at a reasonable number. Like, you just can't not take the Chiefs.
Yeah, totally, totally. All right, let's wrap it up for this episode, shall we?
Are you going to cry or you just can't talk?
I'm emotional because, you know, Maradona died. And
we're turning 40. It's crazy.
It's amazing. Podcast family, it's all account of you and your loyal support. We know you're going to check us out every single week and rate, subscribe, and review, and then unsubscribe. What is the thing about everybody says unsubscribe?
Oh, I don't know. Just again. Let's get the hell out of here.
I know. Let's get the hell out of here. How's my soup, by the way?
Oh, that's right. Wow. That would have been terrible if we... Oh, all right, here we go. It's perfect. All right, I mean, perfect in terms of temperature. Let's see. Here's okay. The first bite. I'm going to slurp. Are you a slurp or a sipper?
I sip. I try not to slurp.
All right, here we go. It's good soup.
Thank you. Yeah, I thought it turned out really well. Maybe I'll give out my recipe on the Levitard Show Tuesday or next week on this podcast for that matter.
This reminds me of Billy Madison when he's eating soup. It's good soup.
You're a noisy soup eater.
Good Dad, soup. We're doing a podcast. I'm trying to be loud,
I get it now. Yeah. Because it's an audio thing.
I want the audience to know. Like, if I would have just sat here, like, all right, here we go. This is what my dad wants me to do.
Right. You're going to have people realize Delicious. That you're actually
like,
taking
I'm
a
like
sip.
Being very clinky with this. Like, I'm.
Yes. No, that's good. You're a pro, man.
I'm going to slap you in the back of the head through this computer right now.
You really
let's
are
end
a
this
pro.
Episode. The cheat. Oh, they almost. Damn it. All right. Let's get out of here.
All right. We're out of here. Podcast family, we love you. We'll see you next week for the Big 4-0.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.